take a serious look at the thought of seven generations, and that everything we do and think and act be done so in accordance with what's right for the planet.
That was Governor Barry Dana of the Penobscot Nation. Governor Dana and other tribal representatives will be joining us here at WERU for our live call-in show on Thursday, January 4th at 10 a.m. We'll be talking about paper companies, the environment, health, and tribal sovereignty. Here on WERU, 89.9 FM in Blue Hill and 102.9 FM in Bangor. For tuning to WERU, listener-supported community radio. The music you're hearing is by Passamaquoddy and Penobscot Indian Drum Group from their tape, Keepers of the Penobscot Drum. This is Amy Brown. I'm here with co-host Meredith DeFrancesco. Good morning, Meredith. And we'd like to welcome our guests here in the studio today, Governor Barry Dana of the Penobscot Nation. Good morning, Governor Dana.
Good morning.
And Mark Chevrolet, legal counsel for the tribes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also joining us later here in the studio will be Governor Richard Doyle of the Passamaquoddy Tribe at Pleasant Point. And joining us by phone will be John Banks, Natural Resources Director of the Penobscot Nation. We'll be giving out the phone number in a few minutes so listeners can call in and join the discussion. But first, we'd like to give a little overview of what we'll be talking about today. Meredith?
Yes. Our discussion today will focus on the recent controversy surrounding the transfer of NPDES, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, permitting authority from the EPA to the state. In all 44 other states making the transfer except Maine, the EPA has retained NPDES authority over water in or affecting tribal territories. The Penobscots, the Passamaquoddy, the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs, and the Houlton Band of Malseets formally contested the state's unusual request to obtain NPDES authority over permits affecting Maine tribal waters. Recently, the Penobscot Nation's governor and both Passamaquoddy governors were brought before state courts after three large paper companies, Georgia Pacific, Champion International, and Great Northern Paper, asked for internal tribal water records under the Freedom of Access Act. The tribes argue that the law does not apply to federally recognized tribes. The companies were offered the water documents they were requesting if charges were dropped, but the companies declined. A state court judge ordered each governor to serve a one-year jail sentence and a $1,000 a day fine for the time they refused to submit the internal tribal documents. The tribes have appealed to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. Their next court date is February 12th. Today we will be talking about the NPDES issue, the governor's court case, water quality in Maine, and the tribe's relationship with the river ecosystem. We'll start with the NPDES issue, the NPDES permitting issue. The Department of Interior has supported the tribe's position that facilities discharging into water in or directly affecting waters within Indian Territory should retain federal EPA oversight. Could you explain your position in regards to the 1980 Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act and your argument that water quality is an internal matter, and later maybe touch on why would the state want jurisdiction over tribal waters? Governor Dana?
Well, it's an internal tribal matter because the water flows through our reservation. Most of the Penobscots living in Maine, or at least as a major cluster, live on the reservation, which is Indian Island. It's right in the Penobscot River. Many of us have lands on islands all the way up the river, all the way up past Lincoln, Maine. So it's an internal tribal matter from that standpoint, as well as, I believe, wording within the Settlement Act clearly states natural resources fall within jurisdiction of the tribe. Also, it goes beyond that. It's also a culture matter that the tribes never lost as a result of the Settlement Act our right to have sustenance fishing, which also ensures the right not only to catch the fish but to eat it, which means it needs to be an edible fish, as well as we've never lost the right to be able to perform our culture. My contention is that as a result of polluted water, there's many aspects of our culture we are not allowed to, or at least we have to make the choice daily not to entertain, and that is gathering of medicinal plants, eating, canoeing, swimming, any activity that involves a daily subsistence and daily living on the river itself.
Mark Chevry, would you like to speak to some of the legal intricacies of the NPDES permitting process and a little background about what that was and how it was different than other states?
Well, the state of Maine applied recently to EPA asking that they be delegated the authority to run the NPDES system for the state of Maine. As part of that process, EPA welcomes comments.
It's 44 other states have requested state authority over this process.
Right, and they've received that. But in all those instances, the EPA has carved out the tribal waters from that authority and retained it for themselves. And that was basically the tribe's position, was that we should be treated similarly, that we are an Indian tribe, and we had concerns that if the authority was delegated to the state, that the trust relationship between the federal government and the Indian tribes would be compromised, and we had concerns about the quality of that regulation, and so that's why we took the position that we did.
The Department of the Interior has issued an initial comment or statement saying that they support the tribe and the EPA's position, but have they yet issued any final statement or comment on that?
Well, I believe the EPA requested input from DOI, and the Department of Interior did that. The opinion that they did issue was a final opinion.
Okay, so they've made their final statement.
Yes.
And the EPA wanted the Department of Interior's input because the Department of Interior was involved in the 1980s Maine Indian Claim Settlement Act, the forming of that. Is that why they were referred to?
Yes, and the way that the federal government deals with Indian tribes is that the department of the federal government that is looked to primarily is the Department of Interior, mm-hmm. and that's why in any cases dealing with Indian tribes, the Department of Interior's opinion is very important.
Yep. And again, to clarify that the state of Maine is asking something different than any of the other states have. They want to retain, when they acquire state oversight of the NPDES, the EPA will actually have oversight, but the state will have authority over the NPDES permitting. They want to acquire it over the Indian lands. Do you know, or the Indian waters, do you know why they are taking this position?
Well, I guess I wouldn't characterize it necessarily as they're trying to say that they, basically what the state of Maine has done is they've applied for this authority, and their position is that they should get it for the entire state. They're not willing to recognize that the Maine Indian tribes have similar rights to other tribes across the country. Their position is that the Maine Indian Claim Settlement Act of 1980 changed that and basically turned us into the functional equivalent of a municipality of the state of Maine, and the tribes argue very strongly against that. We believe and we feel that we're right and that we retained our inherent characteristics as an Indian tribe. And throughout the last 10 years that I've worked with the tribe as their attorney, I think that's been the major stumbling block in tribal-state relations, is this insistence on the state's part that you are no longer Indian tribes, you're a municipality of the state, and you're subject to the same limitations. And the tribes will never accept that, and that has caused a lot of tensions. And again, it's arisen in this context that they want to say, well, other tribes may have those rights, but you no longer enjoy them. And we don't believe that's true under the law, and we certainly never agreed to that as part of the Settlement Act.
And this particular discussion around the fact that this water quality is an internal tribal matter and therefore should be under federal jurisdiction?
Well, we have that was Interior's opinion, certainly, that water quality issues affecting the reservation are internal to the tribe. Our position throughout this whole proceeding has been, EPA, you should retain the authority. We're not asking that you give it to the tribes. We feel that you should retain it. We're concerned that tribes' trust responsibility be carried out by the federal government. If the state has that authority, what happens to that trust responsibility? Do our resources get degraded? And certainly we have, in our view, a better relationship with the federal government as far as when our issues are presented, that they get more attention from the federal government, and we feel that they're the body that should be carrying out these responsibilities.
I just want to jump here in and say that we just got word that John Banks is with us. John, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, John. Great. Would you like to jump in here and say anything about what we've been discussing so far?
Yeah, I'd like to just briefly add to what Mark Chevry has said with regard to the Settlement Act and its impact on the tribe and its cultural activities on our reservations. There's clear language in the Settlement Act that the Settlement Act was not supposed to lead to the further acculturation of the tribes in Maine. And to the tribes in Maine, the use of water in our various daily lives is very, very important to us carrying out our cultural and traditional activities. And the Settlement Act was supposed to protect that. And one way that the Settlement Act was supposed to protect that was by ensuring that as federally recognized tribes, we would continue to have the federal government exercising its responsibilities to protect our resources, our lands and our resources. And we feel that if the state of Maine did get the authority to administer the NPDES permitting program, that they would not recognize the tribes' unique cultural ties to water and water resources, and that our cultural integrity would be harmed.
The federal government would not recognize that?
No, the state.
The state government.
If the state received NPDES permitting authority. But if the federal government, EPA, that is, retains that authority, then they are the government that is supposed to protect us and carry out the trust responsibility. The state doesn't recognize that trust responsibility, and that's been the problem right along since 1980, is that the state does not recognize that the federal government does have this trust responsibility, yet it's very clear in the Settlement Act and prior to the Settlement Act, in the late 70s, when the Maine tribes received federal recognition, it was clear that the federal government has the same responsibility to the Maine tribes that it does to tribes across the country. And that's what the state of Maine just doesn't seem to get.
I'm going to go ahead and give the phone number in case people like to call in and join the discussion. The phone number here is 469-0500. That's 469-0500. Any idea when we can expect a final decision? And does the final decision on this come from the EPA, or what's the process now? Anybody jump in?
Sure. This is Mark Chevry. The application has gone to EPA, and they sought input from DOI. They will make the decision as to whether they delegate this authority to the state of Maine and whether they include the Indian reservations as part of that delegation. We're still waiting for that decision. Certainly, once that decision's made, there's still an opportunity for either the state or the tribes to bring an action in federal court to challenge that decision. So although they make the decision, there's still ability to appeal that based on parties feeling that whether their interests were protected or not.
Okay. And we had a letter from Olympia Snow here that I don't see right here. But basically the gist of the letter, as I recall, was that she was writing a letter to the federal EPA, Carol Browner, in D.C., and had kind of CC'd it to Angus King and to Mindy Luber at the regional EPA, and she was not in support of the federal, of EPA maintaining the NPDES monitoring. She's supporting the state taking over, although it's not entirely clear on why her position is that. So she might be one person that people could contact if they have an opinion about this, but I'm also wondering where other politicians, elected officials are coming down on this matter, if you have some sense of who's supporting you and who isn't. Thanks. Here we have the letter.
Well, I guess I kind of heard the way things work is so goes the governor's office, so goes a congressional delegation in Washington. So I would, if that's in fact true or pretends to be true, then I would think that probably our senators and congressmen would be in favor of the state retaining 100% permitting power. That's, you know, it's hearsay. But we did meet with Olympia Snow and Susan Collins and John Baldacci, and though they agreed that clean water is an issue that we all should be fighting for, they didn't support our claim to sovereignty, and that they weighed heavily on the status as a municipality. And we're, like Mark said, we're in total disagreement with that. So,
right.
But we did have a nice conversation about clean water, at least. And if you can't win one battle, then at least try to save another.
Right. Who stands to benefit from, I mean, there's a lot of powerful people, it sounds like, then, on the side of on the side of transferring this to the state government. Who stands to benefit from it going to the state government? Who's behind these, well, maybe not directly behind the powerful people, but, I mean, it seems to me it would be industry, is that correct? That who else would benefit from it being transferred?
What's the driving engineer?
Yeah. I think John might have an opinion on that.
John?
Take it away, Bangs.
And then we have a phone call. Sheree from Sunset is also on the phone.
I think primarily the folks that would benefit by that would be the major discharges that discharge into reservation waters, because then they wouldn't have to deal with tribal cultural issues and the federal government's responsibility to protect those tribal cultural uses. And I think to some extent it's also a fear of the unknown, because we've never had the discussion directly with the paper mills about what our goals are and what our objectives would be for the future management of these waterways. So to a large extent, I think some of the attorneys that might be representing these paper companies are producing some unfounded fears on behalf of the paper company management.
Okay. Sheree from Sunset, is it Sheree?
Yes.
Go ahead, Sheree.
I'd like to ask John Banks or any of the other people there to give a worst-case scenario. In other words, to translate what could possibly be the consequence of having these rights transferred to the state. What, in other words, to really describe for us laymen, aside from all of the technical and the legalistic jargon, what could ultimately this mean?
This is John Banks. I think that transfer of NPDES authority to the state will result in a lessening of water quality throughout the state of Maine. And that's based on our experience with Maine DEP. And they don't have enough staff people dedicated to inspecting these facilities. And many of these facilities go for years and years and years without being inspected by the state. And I can cite the case of the a stud mill up in Costigan, Maine, where after we tipped off the Maine DEP, when we got some readings on some of our water quality monitoring that looked a little suspicious, we tipped off the Maine DEP, and they went into this particular facility in Costigan, Maine, and determined, found out that there was actually water pollution discharge records were actually being falsified. And the people at the mill that are supposed to be reporting to the state on their water quality monitoring results, they were falsifying the reports. And they, when Maine DEP went in, they found that the equipment that was supposed to be used to collect water quality samples was sitting on the shelves collecting cobwebs while the mill employees were falsifying records. And that's just one result that has happened recently.
That was Champion.
Yes. So that's just an example of what goes on because the state DEP just doesn't have the adequate capability to monitor and enforce water quality regulations in this state.
Hey, John, this is Barry. Could you also go a little further in talking about what is described as self-monitoring?
Yeah, it's these facilities monitor themselves, police themselves, and they have to report, you know, like I said earlier, to DEP when they have spills or bypasses of the treatment plant or problems. And we have found that those incidents don't always go reported. Many of them go completely unnoticed. And it just scares the heck out of me when I see that happening because we don't know what the impacts are to human health, to public health. We don't know what the impacts are to the river ecosystem and to these resources that we have very close cultural ties with.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Cherie. I think she's left us. But we have another call from Heather in Orrington. Heather, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I just want to start out. I have a couple of questions. I just want to say what a great honor it is to be speaking to a head of state. This is the first time I ever have, Governor Dana. I wanted to preface my two questions with a statement, and that is that lawyers and politicians and bureaucrats are so wrapped up with common law that they've forgotten constitutional law, such as the Equal Protection Clause. They've forgotten to consult their own English language dictionaries. This issue is also about air quality. The paper mills, coal-fired power plants in the Midwest, Cultrochem Manufacturing in Orrington, Maine. It's also a campaign finance reform issue. And my two questions are, first, why aren't you considering this as a child welfare issue and arguing your position based on that? Because in my opinion, that is the heart of the matter. And my second question is, when are you going to get John Banks some more filing cabinets? And I'm going to hang up now and let you speak. Thank you.
Governor Dana, I think that was...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure of the correlation between this case and the child welfare, so maybe Mark, you have any handle on that
one. Health issues.
Well, certainly... The tribe has argued that one of the reasons we consider this an internal tribal matter is that it affects the health, safety, and welfare of tribal members because we consider the river part of our reservation, and we consider our relationship with the tribe something very with the river something very sacred, and so the protection of the river is something that we are fighting for very hard, and that's why we take the positions we do, and certainly the river and our interaction with it affects the health, safety, and welfare of our members. So we have made those arguments, and we continue to make any arguments that we can in order to get our position out there that the river needs to be protected and that we have rights to protect that river, and that's what we're pushing for.
Again, we can remind anyone who wants to participate in this conversation to call at 469-0500.
Right. And thank you, Heather. You hung up before I got to get some clarification on what that file cabinet comment was about, but maybe later.
Maybe John can clarify.
We have another caller, Janet from Bar Harbor's on the line. Janet, go ahead.
Hi. I had a question about the tribe's monitoring program. I was wondering what kind of pollutants you're looking for and what kind of monitoring you're doing and how other people can get involved and help you in your effort.
John?
Yeah, we do monitoring here and throughout the Penobscot River Basin. We have a staff of about 5 people that are pretty much out on the river every day. We collect a variety of samples. We collect samples to measure what's called just ambient water quality, which is generally accepted criteria such as water temperature, water pH, conductivity, suspended solids, and just a whole set of general criteria that scientists use to assess water quality and changes in water quality over time. We also do specific monitoring of point source discharges, particularly those point sources that contribute to the toxic loading of the Penobscot River. And most of that monitoring is done through collecting fish and having the tissue of the fish analyzed for the various toxic pollutants. And, we do welcome help from time to time. People that are interested in working with us to help us on our monitoring program, please just get in contact with us. It's a very large river system, and we can always use some help.
Okay. If anyone has any, Heather? Okay, I guess she's gone.
Janet.
I'm sorry. What?
I just said Janet was her name.
Oh, Janet was the last one. I'm sorry. Janet, are you still there? No, okay. Anyone has any has access to the internet and wants to kind of look up what some of the toxic soup is coming out of the different paper companies and other facilities here into the ecosystems in Maine. One place to look is the EPA's own website. They have a section. If you go to epa.gov, you can click on links for EnviroFacts, and there are pages here on each of the different. Well, we specifically looked at Georgia-Pacific, Champion International, and Great Northern paper companies, but there's pages and pages of chemicals like acetaldehyde, ammonia, chlorine dioxide, barium, formaldehyde, methanol, phenol. I certainly don't know what all of these are, but a scientist might be able to make some sense of that. And then also, in terms of dioxins, there is a wonderful book by Lewis Marie Gibbs called Dying from Dioxin. She's a person who lived at Love Canal back at the time all the toxins were found there. And let's see, her book is, again, called Dying from Dioxin. I'm pretty sure it's still in print. It's from 1995, South End Press, if anyone's interested in pursuing that further.
No, go ahead.
Okay. All right, so... Another major issue that is going on here kind of at the same time or following on the tails of the Nifty's issue was the paper companies suing the tribes for access to the internal tribal documents through the Maine Freedom of Access Law, which is similar, I understand, to the Federal Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
So it implies that the tribes are a municipality, and so that your internal documents are somehow open to anybody who wants to apply for them. And you maintain that that's not true, that you're not a municipality, that these are internal tribal documents, correct?
Yes, the Freedom of Access Act is a Maine law that regulates the state and its subdivisions and obviously allows its constituents, its the people that make up the state, to access information from those bodies. And part of the idea in there is that they're regulating government. And according to the terms of the Settlement Act, tribal government is an internal tribal matter. And only our tribal members have access to that system. So it doesn't seem consistent for them to claim that people who aren't part of our political structure should have access to documents that are generated as part of that. And we feel that we have a good case. Unfortunately, the case is state court, and the Superior Court judges ruled against us, but we've appealed that to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, and that is will be argued on February 12th in Portland. And we've also tried to get the issue in front of the federal courts based on prior case law that says that interpretations of the Settlement Act are a federal issue. And so we're still pursuing those, and we still feel that the claim that we are subject to this law is not correct, and that our actions as a tribal government are not subject to regulation by the state, especially in the instance of minutes from our meetings and how those meetings are conducted.
Right. Well, we'd definitely like to talk some more about that and take some more phone calls. We're going to go to a short music break, and after that we'll come back. And if anyone has any questions or would like to join the discussion, you can call 469-0500. So the music that you're hearing is actually live call-in show. The number is 469-0500. I'm Amy Brown here with Meredith DeFrancesco, co-host, and Mark Chevrolet, legal counsel for the Penobscot and Passamaquoddy?
Just the Penobscot Nation.
Governor Barry Dana of the Penobscot Nation. We're joined on the phone still by John Banks, the Natural Resources Director, and hope to be joined soon by Governor Richard Doyle of the Passamaquoddy Tribe, Governor Richard Stevens, the third governor that was named in the contempt of court charges that we were talking about earlier, was unable to join us today. I just wanted to get back to that whole contempt of court charge thing, because it's just really astonishing when you think about the fact that the three tribal leaders from the state of Maine are actually facing possibly going to jail for refusing to turn over internal tribal documents. I mean, that's just so astonishing to think that that could actually happen. Now, is that still a possibility with this, if this appeal fails?
Yes. The part of the judge's ruling was that we basically had three options at the time that he issued his ruling. First, that our governors go to jail and that we each tribe pay $1,000 a day fine until the documents were turned over. Two, we turn the documents over. Or three, we make an appeal to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. And obviously, we went with the third option. We preferred not to do that, but based on the circumstances, we really didn't feel we had a choice. But depending on the ruling that that court comes down with, if they uphold the decision of the Superior Court, then we're back with just the two options, which are that either we turn the documents over, which all of our leaders are very strongly against, because it goes against their oath of office that they uphold tribal law. But the other alternative is not that great either when you're facing jail time and $1,000 a day fine. So that's still a potential, and that's still something the tribes face. And that's certainly a concern for everyone within the tribe.
I definitely imagine the outcry must be very strong. I saw that there was quite a crowd at the outside the courthouse at the last hearing. Do you want supporters to go to the courthouse the next time this goes to court? Do you want people to gather outside in support, or would you rather keep it low key? Or have you discussed how you want that handled?
Well, we've announced that we had a court date and where it was. People ask what time and how do we get there.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like there's going to be people showing up.
Yeah, I know people want to show up. Is that something that you're okay with if people are going to do that?
We find that through relationships, through many different types of organizations, that it strengthens the whole case, and that really many people throughout the state and actually across the country have kind of joined forces here, in the sense when it comes to clean water, that everybody needs to be really active on that. And that's sort of what we're standing here for. I mean, we're going to be fighting to obtain our sovereignty and that we're not subject to freedom of access, but at the same time, the underlying situation is what goes into our water.
Right. So when's that court date, and how do people get there?
February 12th in Portland.
In Portland, at the big courthouse there, the federal courthouse?
This is the state Supreme Judicial Court. We don't have a definitive time. We know it's in the morning, and court begins at 9. We're assuming it will be sometime that morning, and once we get a time, we'll be getting that word out.
Okay, and we'll be here at WERU trying to keep listeners updated on this situation. You mentioned support. I know there's a letter from the National Congress of American Indians in support, a resolution in support of the tribes that we have here. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but basically the resolution, it's called a resolution to support the Maine tribes in dispute over the delegation of the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System Program on Authority Tribal Waters, and it has the whereas is the statements that kind of just state what we've already said about what's going on. And the resolution that this National Congress of American Indians is in support of the Maine tribes, in solidarity with the Maine tribes regarding this issue. Now, can you tell us some about who the National Congress of American Indians is and what this means to have this resolution coming from them?
Well, I'll speak on what it is. Mark can probably give a better overview of how they're organized and who they are. But what it means is when you have, I believe they have an organization of 500 tribes, and basically what they're saying is what you do to one tribe, you're doing to all tribes. Whether we're in a state, a lot of tribes don't really recognize state lines. We tend not to recognize the Canadian Maine border because our relatives are in Canada and they're relatives. So tribes view each other as relatives. You know, we call each other brother and sister, and we don't say, the ones from Texas, or the ones, you know, we say, you know, the tribe, the tribal name, and that's a real way of respecting each other. So we are all connected, and we all have very similar issues. We have very similar cultures, and our connection to the land is all one and the same. So what you do to one, you do to all the others, and that's the way we run our ways of thinking. So to have a formalized resolution from these tribes is in keeping with that way of thinking that we have. Mark can speak as to who exactly they are.
Well, there's 500 plus federally recognized tribes within the United States, and each of these tribes has a unique history. They have their own government, and each of these tribes has a different form of government. So all the leaders of these tribes come together, and there's the NCAI as an organization that helps the tribes work together on issues, or common issues, and gives a voice to them. And I believe most of the tribes in the United States are affiliated with NCAI. And they certainly view any chance of a tribal leader going to jail as a very extreme matter. And certainly all across Indian country, I think there's a concern. And that's what's being expressed in this resolution, is that we as Indian people need to stand together. And as separate governments, we have our own unique interests, but we also have common goals and common interests and those are usually tied to protecting the environment and protecting resources. So that's a little bit of a background on that.
I would like to remind callers once again, you can join this conversation by calling 469-0500, and you can get right into the studio here. Any questions you may have for the representatives we have here today. I did have a question of clarification on who is pursuing this court case. Is it just the three paper companies, Champion International, Georgia Pacific, and Great Northern, or are there others joined with them in this?
Those are the three primary companies. Mm-hmm. Certainly the attorneys that represent them represent many, if not all, of the paper companies within the state, but those are the companies that are seeking the documents. And we should add that the state of Maine has intervened in this case.
They've been submitting papers as well, you mean?
Yes, they've taken positions, and their view is that the tribes are subject to the Freedom of Access Act, and that's, again, something that the tribes don't agree with, and we feel it's a misinterpretation of the Settlement Act.
Yeah, we have a call now from Paul in Palermo. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I just wanted to ask Barry or anybody that can answer what it is that the companies are interested in knowing, what they're after.
Good question.
Well, this is Barry. I'm not really sure. I guess John would probably know a lot more about that, but my general understanding is it's documents concerning any information that we have or correspondence we have with EPA on water quality issues. I understand that just about anything on those documents that they're seeking is obtainable in other ways. They didn't have to go through the tribes to get it, but obviously they have. So maybe John would like to speak a little bit more on that.
Yeah, and Mark should jump in here too. There is, I think, like six categories of documents that they were looking for in the original court decision, the Superior Court decision, that is. But I think the reason they were looking for certain documents has to do with, you know, the NPDES delegation decision. I think the paper companies were interested in trying to develop some sort of a conspiracy theory that they think exists between the federal government and the tribes. And they were trying to convince everybody that there's secret meetings going on and secret agreements going on between the tribes and EPA, which is not truthful. I mean, there have been no secret meetings or no secret agreements. But they're trying to build some sort of a conspiracy theory, which I don't understand.
Okay, well, I don't either, so I hope we get a little more clarity on that. Thanks.
I don't know if Mark could add to that or not.
Well, I would just add that there were six requests, and they focused on any regulatory matters that the tribe had dealt with regarding the river. Certainly any correspondence and that we'd had with EPA regarding the NPDES issue. It also had to do with our applying to EPA for treatment as a state, which we can do under the Clean Water Act, and we have done that in order to try to have some role on the river. And I guess that's the thing that the tribes have been striving for since the Settlement Act, is that prior to 1980, the tribes have really had no role in protecting the river and trying to protect its resources. And basically the state is trying to keep that status quo in place, that the tribes don't have a role in that, and we're pushing for it because we believe it's part of our rights as Indian tribes and also part of our duty as a Indian tribe to protect the river. And so that we're pushing for those rights to protect the river. The state has never recognized those, and they continue not to recognize those, and that's really what it comes down to.
We had a note passed to us a little while ago, a question from in the studio in writing, asking about the state, in terms of the state's oversight prior to 1975. The state did oversee the water quality issues and different other issues relating to the tribes in Maine. Is that correct? And what kind of job did they do when they were in charge back then?
Yes, prior to federal recognition, the state of Maine claimed authority to regulate everything with regard to the tribes. I mean, they enacted laws that govern every aspect of tribal life on the reservation, and that relationship existed since the Maine became a state back in 1820 up until 1975 with the advent of the cases that led to the Settlement Act. And basically the state, we feel, has not done that great of a job in protecting the river. And we've never had that voice in the past, and that's really what we're fighting for, is the voice to protect the river and protect resources that we feel are important, and we feel all people should share in that idea that these things are important, they should be taken care of. So we are concerned whenever the state fails to recognize the tribes as having any role in that, and that's really what a lot of this comes down to, is who has the authority, who has the power to regulate the river, and certainly the tribes feel that we should have a voice, and that's what we're pushing for.
I'd add that even though it may seem like the state was, I guess in a sense, taking care of us for all those numbers of years, there was a whole history or relationship, you know, that built up to that, and throughout the course of our history, we maintain that we've always been our own people, our own form of government, and a sovereign people.
And we did survive as a unique people, and the Settlement Act and the law that was behind the cases that led up to the Settlement Act indicated that the claim by Maine for complete authority over us was incorrect, and those court cases established that we have this, we had the same rights as any other tribe within this United States, and that obviously brought the state of Maine to the table, and that's when all the discussions regarding the Settlement Act and how it would be developed came about.
How many acres right now is classified as Indian Territory in Maine now at this point?
I'm not quite certain.
Around 200,000 acres? I don't know if I had heard that.
Well, for the Penobscots, we have our historic reservation, which is Indian Island and all islands north there from the Penobscot River, and so we don't have an exact acreage figure on that, but our trust lands, we have about 60,000 acres of trust land, and we're still working to get the 150,000, which was originally envisioned under the Settlement Act, and I believe the Passamaquoddies have about 120,000 acres of trust land. That's just an estimate, and they have their historic reservations, which probably are another 20,000 or so acres.
Between their two different locations.
Right, at Indian Township and at Pleasant Point.
So underlying all of the, like, political, legal stuff that we've been talking about today, really it does come down to the tribal relationship, both tribes' relationships with the river ecosystems that are near them and the health of the rivers. It does seem that that would directly impact the culture and the continuance of the culture of the Passamaquoddy and Penobscot peoples, that when the river ecosystem is threatened, that is threatened. Through fishing limits or the fish being contaminated and in other ways. And I know when we spoke earlier, Governor Dana, you talked a little bit about some of the plants that you can no longer gather. Could you say a little bit more about that, please?
Well, it goes back even further than that, in that we are our distinct race of people, and we have a history in this area, and actually all across Maine, that dates back thousands of years, maybe 10 or 11,000 years, and every moment, every thought, every plant that we ever ate or animal that we ate, activity that we did, and ways that we thought gets transmitted into our genetic code. We're living today with that same genetic code as people who walked here 10,000 years ago. I feel it should be my right to have the opportunity to experience nature, experience the river, the food, the same plants, the same animals, much in the same way as my ancestors did. And that would be, it goes, I should have the choice to subsist if I choose to. It's fortunate for many people that we can choose not to, that we can have a job and purchase all our food and buy canned food and frozen food and that type of stuff. I prefer not to. 90% of what I eat comes from the earth. I harvest my own animals and plants. Medicines that I take generally are things that I've gathered and prepared myself. And these are things that I want to pass down to my children and my grandchildren, and hope that they will do the same, and so that seven generations from today, the same things that were being done, the same activities and the same thought processes, the same values that experienced here 8,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 1,000, 500 years ago, and today will be transmitted 500 years from now. That's our duty as human beings on this planet, is to make sure that that will always continue. I'm sort of pleased in a way, if you will, that having occupied this position as governor of the tribe, that this whole case is before the people of the state of Maine, that it's time that we take a serious look at what goes into the air, what goes into the water, what's going into the land, and how it eventually gets into the water. And where does all that water go? It's going into the ocean. All the rivers of the world go into the ocean. What, and, you know, where is it going to end?
And somehow through all of this, the tribes are put on the defensive, you know.
I think Governor Doyle would agree that we're kind of frustrated in the sense that every time something, an issue comes before us, we have to prove that we've been here, that we are different, and it's always on the burden of the tribes to make these arguments. And maybe that's okay in the sense that our voice is being heard finally, but we would hope that the underlying issues that are propping up would be embraced by the people of the state of Maine, mm-hmm. that we are all affected.
Did, by the way, you carried around with you for quite a while a bottle of fresh Penobscot River water, which you challenged any of the paper company executives to drink at the last court hearing. Anybody take you up on that?
No, not to my knowledge. No one did.
Not yet, huh? I think we have another caller, but while we're waiting for that, John Banks, did you have anything that you wanted to add to that? Oh, we have Governor Doyle on the phone, too, so.
Yes, I'd just like to add that the issue of health impacts, you know, goes way beyond just tribal members that use these resources. I mean, for instance, Maine lobsters are fairly famous throughout the world, and I fear that it will be somewhere in the near future where information will come out that Maine lobsters are unsafe to consume. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Governor Dana said, all of these rivers are discharging into the ocean, and everything's connected on this planet. All of the resources are connected, and water is the element that connects everything and connects us all. And that's why one of the very important natural laws that exists in our culture forever and ever is that you protect the water at all costs. You do not pollute the water. And I think we're just beginning to see some of the effects of years and years of discharges into these rivers. And it's going to impact the ocean. It's going to impact the resources of the ocean. And there have been some health warnings already put out about eating lobster tamale, but I think this is just the beginning. And we really need to take a serious look at these impacts, not just locally, but regionally and globally.
In fact, every inland body of water has a fish advisory. Is that true?
On Mercury, yes.
On Mercury. We do have Governor Richard Doyle on the phone from the Passamaquoddies. Governor Doyle, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
We have just a few minutes left before we wrap up, but obviously you weren't able to make it here, and I'm really hoping it isn't due to my giving bad driving directions. But have you been listening, and is there anything that you'd like to add to the discussion?
Yeah, I have been listening ever since you got started, and I think that Governor Dana has spoken well for both tribes. I concur with him highly on all his points, and I think that John Banks and Mark Chevry has also done a good job. I think for the Passamaquoddies, what we're looking at is both river and ocean my reservation at Pleasant Point is right on the Passamaquoddy Bay and also between the Coxcomb Bay. And what we've been noticing through our monitoring efforts is some inability to eat our traditional foods, both the fiddleheads and the porpoise and the and some of the fish. So I think that what it is about is water and our right to have clean water.
Right.
Thank you.
It looks like Mark has a question for you.
No, I was just going to follow up that I think one of the points that hasn't really been emphasized here is that as part of the Settlement Act, and it was a settlement, and it was hard negotiations on both sides, but out of that agreement came the idea that the tribes do have a sustenance fishing right, which means that we have the right to take fish from the waters of our reservation. And as part of that right, we feel that there needs to be sufficient quantities and they have to be of a quality that we can eat. And that's not the case right now. And so that right is not being recognized, we feel, by people within the state. And I think that's another legal issue that's underlying this whole matter.
Okay, great. We're going to move into kind of wrapping up with some announcements. I understand that there's a conference on January 24th. Do we have any details on that yet, an environmental conference and fundraiser?
Yeah, January 24th, Indian Island, Maine. John, you can correct anything I might mess up here. We're hosting a water quality summit, and many groups from around the state of Maine will be present at that time. It'll be at the Sock Alexis Arena. I don't know if we're given a small lunch or if that's part of the registration fee, which is just a couple bucks or something like that. Later on that evening, we're going to be having a meal that will be a fundraiser. We're incurring some incredible cost in with this battle about clean water. So we're encouraging people to attend that, both the conference and the meal, in support of the tribes and actually, you know, it's in support of anyone's efforts to fight for clean water.
I guess we have
time for one more call. Richard on the phone right now. We have time for a quick question before we wrap up. Richard.
I was just saying that with the way the political situation is going in America now, with Bush in office and, you know, a lot of the Indian nations are going to be stepped on. And, you know, can we use this for a stepping stone to get, like, the outside community involved in what's going on with our Earth? I guess that's about it.
Thank you, Richard. Well, we probably don't have time to go down through a list of phone numbers for different elected officials, but who can people contact and they can find phone numbers and email addresses on their own if people want to express an opinion on this issue? Who do you recommend that they contact?
Well, I think it's important for people to stay in close contact with their local legislator in the state of Maine, senators from the state of Maine, and also our congressional delegation. You know, these are the people that put them in office, and their voice needs to be heard. Obviously, when you vote for someone, you're not always talking about every issue there is, but when issues do come up, they do get heard, and you know, you hear about campaign finance reform, so issues do trickle on up, and not that this ever will be, you know, the main campaign theme at some point, but I certainly would like it to be, so I think that's critical that people contact people in Augusta and people in Washington.
Okay, great. I want to thank our guests today and all of the people who called in, and we'll keep you posted here at WERU on this issue and try to keep the news coming on this. And many thanks to Helen York, our production guru. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.